Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
This week's episode is sponsored by Vitel. They provide business telephone systems' latest technology, customised and tailored to suit business requirements, remote management and configuration. Their selling points are that they lower costs by removing line rentals, increase flexibility and fit in with the business, rather than making the business fit in with their phone system. They're based in mainland UK.
Hi, Charlotte Martin here. I play the character you love to hate, Susan Carter. Get your questions to me on dumptydum.com via SpeakPipe, because I'll be joining Lucy and Royfield on the show on October the 24th for a Village Shop special. So get your tabards and name badges at the ready, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Hello, Royfield, Lucy, and all the Dumpty Dumpty Dumptyers. I'm Edmund King, OBE, President of the AA, the Automobile Association, at AA President on Twitter, where we would like to thank you for awarding us the Dumpty Dum Road Rescue Service Award for 2016. It really is a huge honour to win this prestigious award. I'd like to thank my mother. Well, she introduced me to the Archers about 50 years ago, and whenever we heard that music, it was always bedtime to give mother some rest from the nine kids. The first character I remember? That would be Walter Gabriel. Remember the voice? Or the plot when his son Nelson was reported missing in the plane crash. His fingerprints were found on a bottle of whiskey that implemented him in the Borchester mail van robbery. He was acquitted. But was he really innocent? Now, unfortunately, we won't be renaming to the Archers Automobile Association, but we'd like to offer some automobile advice to Ambridge residents. We want to offer Helen some AA Trust Drive Confident lessons to help her get back on the road after Nasty Rob destroyed her confidence. And drivers, you need to be aware of the mud left on the road by Adam's tractor. Plot predictions? Well, the Fairbrothers pickup truck. It will probably fall victim to a breakdown, and we'll be happy to attend. So, thanks again for the award. Dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum-dum-de-dum-de-dum-dum.
This is Dum-de-dum, the show about reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. On the breakfast in bed that is Royfield. That's a great reggae song, that, actually, Lucy.
What? Breakfast in bed?
Yeah. It is on
Never
me.
Heard that.
You don't have to say you love me. Yeah, it's great. Classic lovers rock. put it at the end of the show. But we've got lots of things to come at the end of the show. Ooh.
We have.
Yeah, we've got a special treat for you folks. But anyway, more on that later. Now, let's just read that again. Let's get back into our flow. I am the breakfast in bed, that is Royfield Brown, with my other tangerine pensioner, that is...
Lucy Freeman. And, more excitingly, we have the amazing Emerald O'Hanrahan, who plays Emma Grundy.
Woohoo! And the last part of our best birthday ever, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dum-de-Dum comes from Edmund King OBE, president of the Archers Automobile Association. We don't mess about, do we, Luce?
That was one of the funniest. I just got a message from Royfield that was a series of expletives followed by the words, "Listen to this!" There he was.
And there were you last week saying we didn't have a social media strategy.
I never said that, you know.
You did.
You keep telling me I said that, but I didn't.
Oh, yes,
joking about that. Yes.
So we have OBEs that listen
to
Dum-de-Dum. But that was just super duper funny. Somebody said, "What feed am I looking at? Is this you and yours?" They got the because we were comparing the best breakdown recovery service, whether it was Green Flag, the RAC, or whether it was the AA, or should we say the AAA. And very obviously, you know who won. It was the Archers Automobile Association, previously known as just the Automobile Association, the AA, and that absolutely made my day. So Edmund King OBE, we salute you. Thank you for that, sir. Now, Luce, if anybody else would like to sponsor us or send in a dum-de-dum or just anything really, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a dum-de-dum, give us a plot prediction, or have your mother offer to give your colostomy bag a quick rinse through, then ring us on 0203 0313 105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Shambridges for her amazing voices, to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us, and to Derek for in the back bedroom. Derek is keenly following the US elections. He was a Trump supporter. But he's now lost faith entirely, as he says, "How can you trust a man who thinks just because you're famous, it's okay to just go ahead and grab a woman's cat?"
Lucy, you know, I said we've got something very special at the end of the show.
Yes.
Right. So I'll just tell people who it is. Do you remember, good listener, a couple of weeks ago, I was savaged on the iTunes review section by somebody called Clem Cott. I actually speak to him. And do you know one of the things he talks about, Lucy?
No.
You and your potty mouth. However.
Right. Other shows are available, you know.
Well, I'm sure at some point in our 2-hour conversation, I said something very similar. We talked for quite a long time. But don't worry, folks. It's not a 2-hour long addition to this show. I did edit it down to about 15 minutes to get his salient points.
That is a good segue. Now,
Jax, we're a magic team, aren't we? Because I queued you up and,
you... Seamless, that was. Right, Dumpty Dummers, here's the thing. Royfield is a nice man. Me, not so much. I am not nice and I am less of a man in every respect. So I am bad cop in this partnership. So therefore, to give you all some bad news. We have decided, this is my suggestion, which Royfield has unwillingly gone along with-ish, that we're going to have to cut down the calls. As you know, we love everyone that rings in, and this show is built around you lot ringing in. But the more listeners we get, and there's now 35,000 of you, the more callers we get, the longer the show gets, and the longer it takes Royfield to edit it and you to listen to it. The fact that the podcast is now longer than the omnibus of the programme that the podcast is about is getting a bit loony, really. So I suggested to Royfield that we pick 8 calls each week, maximum 2 minutes each. We'll try and pick different ones each week, so everyone gets to go and everyone gets to put their 2 penny worth in. And also, if you're an emailer in, don't think you are going to escape my vicious cull, because if you email in, we're going to pick 1 point out of your email to make the point. I'm really, really sorry if this sounds harsh. I'm aware it's horrible and I'm aware that Royfield's hiding under the desk, but we really don't want to end up with a 14-hour show, which is where we're heading now. So please don't stop calling in. That's not what we want you to do. Please, please, please don't stop calling in. We love the calls, but Also, please don't be miffed if you don't make the cut a particular week. It'll just be because someone else has made the same point or something like that. So that's it. So we are going to have to start being more taking more editorial decisions about what goes out, because otherwise the show is just going to get longer and longer and longer. So it was me. You can all shout at me and you can all blame me. And Royfield, you can come out from under the desk now.
Is it safe?
Yes. They're all throwing things at my head, not yours. It's all right.
Other thing to say is, because it has been taking me so long to edit, I did kind of screw up last week by not including. I only thought two calls were included, but it looks like it was three. So that was Goddess Diva, Jan from Cannes, and then also Debs from Germany. And I wasn't aware, Debs, that your call wasn't actually in. I did edit it into the show, but when I export it, when I hit save, it didn't save. And that is in part because what I'm not doing, everybody, is listening back to the recording before I upload it, because it's taken me the best part of a whole working day to do. So then when I've done 8 hours, to add another 2 hours onto that to listen to the show is just a step too far. So mistakes now abound because of the length that it takes me to edit the show. So there you go. Hopefully you all understand, but we still love you all.
Yes.
Right. Now, on this week's truncated show, we have calls from Sarah from Cambridge, who's wistfully romantic, Yokel Bear, who thinks Jill was being grumpy, bye-bye, 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 Steve, who thinks that Jill was churlish, Steve the pirate, who thinks Rob is going on the run, Witherspoon, who thinks Pip is out of line, and Andrew Horn, who's happy to see two role models in the village. But first, it's Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
Helen took a veg box to the Dowager Lady Kaz of Krim. The Honourable Kaz expressed surprise that her children had received a box full of muddy turnips with the yells of delight that Helen claimed they had, but Helen reiterated that they had loved it. Just for a minute, she sounded like the old bossy Helen trying to inflict her certainty on the rest of the world. Titchy Knob tried to front it out at the cricket club, hoping for cheers, but they gave him the clap instead. Well, what do you think? You've all been very quiet, asked Titchy Knob of the entirely silent cricket team. It was interesting to hear them all slow clap, as it made me realise that Ambridge were actually playing a full team. For months, I thought it was Harassment, Adam, Johnny and one of Auntie Cardboard's gingers. Titchy Knob has now started laughing in a rather delirious, maniacal manner, which implies to me, anyway, that he's about to go full-on postal. He sounds like Herbert Lom in The Pink Panther. Any day now, he'll have developed a twitchy eye and will be rushing around the village starkers, waving his colostomy bag about and shouting, "Real custard, real custard! I hate tuna, I love tuna! Anyway, I am in both and ha-ha-ha!" Hootie Jill began her 186th birthday party with breakfast in bed. She had a pot of tea, 14 rounds of toast and an entire Victoria sponge. It was going to be the best birthday ever, said Pip, before ruining it by inviting the one person that Hootie Jill expressly hates above all others, and then being flabbergasted when Jill started throwing icing at everyone and shouting, "I don't want that pillock here, and anyway, it's my party, and no one asked me." Johnny went completely berserk, setting up a mock interview for Tom for his scholarship. Oh, panels, brilliant. Johnny really needs to set his watch right. He greets everyone with the words, "Can I just have a quick word? I'm in a bit of a rush." And then ends it with, "I must go. I'm in a real rush." This is apparently because he can't get into the bathroom because Henry and Helen are in there all the time at Bridge Farm. So presumably he's belting around Ambridge, trying to find some kind of working lavatory before his wellies fill up entirely. Especially when he's living on the Bridge Farm diet, which is almost exclusively leek-based. Anyway, this mock interview, it was just an informal thing, but very realistic. Realistic because there were no women on it. Just a panel of interviewers, some cameras, a podium, a stage, a few mics, full hair and makeup, and Francis Copland to direct. Brian wasn't sure what his motivation was, but Johnny paced up and down, whacking his riding crop on his jodhpur, saying, "Think hostile, Brian. Think Samuel L. Jackson." As it was, the panel took Tom apart, but it wasn't that difficult after Tom had used the immortal phrase, "I stuck to my sausages." I knew hygiene was a priority at Bridge Farm, but I had no idea they were actually adhering to the foodstuffs. Princess Alice Eugenie Adenoids, coloured in some like brilliant pictures for her like online presentation. Adenoids was horrified that she didn't get unequivocal praise from Daddy for her colouring in and marched off in a huff. She is becoming more like Kate than Kate. I bet you're missing your sweet things now you're not living with Ian, said Jenny. That was a little personal, I felt. She was feeding Adam biscuits through the hole in his box of scampi fries. After Adam had run through every permutation of what Ian might do, he then had the revolutionary idea of going to talk to Ian. No, for God's sake, don't do that, said Jenny, darling. Never, ever talk to the person who'll be able to give you an answer. It's so much better to keep aimlessly guessing with me, though, darling. Have another biscuit, I'll climb in. Then Alice turned up with her laptop and clambered in too. The sides of the scampi fries box were bulging by this time with mournful Aldridge's biscuits and computer hardware. But as a family, they've never been able to tell when enough was enough. Are you looking at that again, Susan? Said Neil. Yes, she said. Until the rash has gone, I'm going to have to keep looking at it. Take your overalls off next time. Anyway, Neil had a quiet, tactful word with Kate, who had a less than quiet, tactful word with Susan. Basically, Susan, Neil said your chakras look like a couple of spaniel's ears and your cheese flapping around like a windsock. There was a lovely little exchange with Arsula and Pat in which Arsula felt that Titchy Knob should be allowed to see Giddy Jack earlier. Helen's response was roughly the same as Titchy Knob's stoma. Bag of shite. Helen discovered the Titchy Knob and ripped everything out faster than Lillian when Justin has a quick 10 minutes before a board meeting. Sausage Boy hit the trail and headed into number one, the green. Good, quick, everyone move into all the available houses so that Titchy Knob and Ursula have to eat toad in the hole in the culvert. Somehow there will be a point to that culvert. There will, damn it. Anyway, Sausage Boy was busily planning turning number one, the green, into a little pad of seduction for enticing Krusty. Put some bunting up and filled it with marsh warblers. Then Johnny announced he was moving in, went galloping round there with his bowels at bursting point, and then discovered that Tom had ripped out the lavatory and placed the reed bed sewage system. Kate is doing a world-class impression of somebody who is saner than sane. She knows that any sudden lunges at his chi will send Roy skedaddling for the hills, but she did tell him to get back out there, whip open the nearest pair of tent flaps he can find and get his pole up. The end!
Lucy.
Yep.
I enjoyed that this week. But well, in reference, though. In reference to the special person that... We have two special people on the show this week,
do.
Don't we?
We are awash with special personages.
We are. Well, one of them is a little bit more special than the other. So I was referring to my bête noire, the man who kind of savaged me, who's at the end of the show. But we kind of have somebody now, don't we?
Right now we have woman of the hour, Dame Emma of Grundy.
Awesome.
This is very exciting because Emma, our listeners have always had a somewhat ambiguous relationship with Emma for various reasons. Especially because she can be a bit snarky with Kirsty sometimes as well.
She's very threatened by Kirsty.
She is.
Very.
She really is, isn't she?
She really is. It's brilliant. I love it.
And then we had Friday. And we had Baroness Emma of Grundy absolutely ripping Rob a new one, which was just fantastic. People were standing up and applauding, and you know, you had standing ovations in kitchens all over the UK. So,
it's so exciting. Yeah. It's a long time coming.
Well, you were the first. Emma was the first. Sorry, I know I keep saying you and I mean Emma.
That's obviously. All right. That's all right.
But Emma was the first person that actually told Rob she was not happy with his behaviour. Everyone else was kind of like, oh my God, he's coming. Quick, everybody run away. And they'd all beetle off. And Emma just said,
no, she's brave.
I'm not. She is brave.
She's become a really strong woman. It's been amazing seeing her kind of evolution from her obviously slightly problematic youth.
Yeah.
Her kind of adolescence, which was obviously incredibly lots of stupid mistakes, but just seeing how, especially since she's had Kira and since Susan's mum, her nan, died, and all of her kind of growing up in the show has been really, I think it's been beautifully written, and it's just lovely. I just felt so kind of honoured to be given that tirade. I'd been desperate to tell him, you know, for years. I remember when he first came into the show and everyone was going, he's lovely and he could be really nice. He's got this caramel voice and couldn't you listen to him forever? I was like, yeah, I could. He's got an amazing voice. And obviously Tim is a lovely man, but that character is evil. Yeah. And I was sure that he'd kill Helen. I was sure he'd put her in the hospital at least. So it didn't, obviously, I mean, we don't know anything about where things go.
I was going to say, how much did you guys know about the jury?
I didn't know a thing.
Outcome, really?
Didn't know a thing. Yeah, I was listening as a real listener and as a fan. And I've always been a fan. And it was really exciting. I mean, I didn't know about the stabbing until just before it.
Really?
Until just before it happened, till the month they were recording it and then listening to it. And I, you know, that was a powerful episode.
Yeah.
And but I listened to that episode as a fan, as a listener, and all the fallout from it, all the build up to it. Obviously, I have my place in the show, and her and Helen have a friendship, which is so beautiful, yeah. So lovely. And I always feel like if like everything Emma has, I mean, I do think she's grown up a lot, and I do think she's a sweet girl and a good mum and a good person, actually. She's brave and she's courageous, but and she's moved on from this kind of really tempestuous youth a lot and really developed.
Being the tempestuous youth in question.
Yeah, exactly. Ed and Will and all that nonsense. But she does, like, you do get the feeling that everything she has, she feels she could lose at any moment. So she's really like, yeah. This business with Fallon, you know, she's really pleased about that. She holds on to that. But any kind of small threat like Kirsty,
yeah,
is like, gets her kind of like tiger comes out. And everything with Helen, you know, when her and Rob eloped, she obviously took that really hard.
Yeah.
Thought that it meant that Helen really didn't think of her as a friend. And she's got a bit of Susan's kind of ladder climbing instincts.
Mm.
And I think she really values this friendship with Helen because it's like a better sort of friend, you know?
Yeah.
Better class of friend in the village.
Well, I think she's always, the poor girl's always had Christopher rammed down her throat, hasn't she? As you know,
golden balls.
Especially because of his health problems in the beginning and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and now he's married into Aldridge's, you know, and the pony club and all that.
Yeah, he's really married well. And Emma
Emma was kind of the embarrassment, yeah. You know, and then there's poor old Emma, you know.
Oh, yeah. Also, and especially with her poverty storyline and everything, she's always in that. She's cast in that poor Emma kind of thing.
I think that the scene of Emma and the food bank was one of the first kind of intimations of the recession being dealt with in sort of soaps and sort of mainstream media, really. It hadn't, you know, because EastEnders always does things with a very, very broad brush. And if anything goes wrong, they just blow the pub up or something. But, you know, it's, The Archers is so much more. I mean, I know we take the mickey out of it, but it is so much more subtle in a lot of ways. And I found
everything really happens in real time.
Yeah.
That's a real luxury of radio.
Yeah. But I found that really moving. The Emma in the food bank and eating, saying, "Oh no, I've eaten," and you know, because she wanted to make sure that the children got food and everything.
It was heartbreaking. And it was really hard to. I mean, it was an honour, but it was hard playing that storyline just because she's so it. You know, it's no joke.
No.
And what, I mean, we were getting letters saying they'd be entitled to this benefit and that benefit, and, you know, but, and how could a village let that happen to, you know, everyone would be in each other's pockets. But the pride thing, not wanting to go down that route and not wanting anyone to see her as a victim anymore. You know, she'd chosen Ed. They had this life together. She had her kids. They were working so hard and yet they just couldn't make it work. And it's such a common story for so many families. And especially at that time. And it really felt like we were carrying something. We got a lot of Barry, who plays Ed, and I both got a lot of feedback and we got letters sent. And it was really, it seemed to really touch the listeners, which was really, it was so powerful.
Do you feel that her sort of because of the sort of, which she talked about this week, I know you're all out of time, but the this week was the scene in which she mentioned to Helen about Susan having been in prison and how she missed her and all that. Do you think that sense of sort of temporariness or kind of does that come from all of a sudden overnight your life changes? She's had so many sort of shocks to the system, hasn't she?
Yeah, she has. Yeah, I think that's a really great kind of thing to think about with her. A really great question, because she has. I love delving into it like this. It's brilliant. I thought I was really pleased, because obviously we just get sent the scripts about a week before we record them. We don't know. We're not in Storyliners meetings. Mm. We don't get synopses. We just turn up with the scripts that we're doing, maybe three out of a month, and have our little bit. And so having a scene with Helen where I talked about Susan and her going to prison and all of that, I loved that we were able to have a conversation, because I've been thinking it must have been so kind of, I mean, she's always felt for Henry and they had that lovely relationship when the kids were very young. There's not much difference in age between them, and I think she, especially looking after him in the summer and all that, that she really kind of looked at him and saw, that temporary kind of feeling that gives you.
Mm.
I mean, Neil is like the most solid dad. You wouldn't, you know, you can't think of a better father. It just makes me cry how sweet he is, you know.
Yeah.
He's just such a lovely guy. But there must be a lot of residual damage from her being...
Yeah,
you know, from her, so much shame.
Yes,
from her mum. She is that kind of. She's got that horribin shame thing. You know, it's part of the genes.
To be fair, she's got a fair deal to be ashamed about. I mean,
that's fair. But I mean, even
the horribins haven't covered themselves in glory, have they? Really?
No, but I mean,
but Emma's done nothing. Emma's been, you know, she's just a victim of the sort of the reputation of her family, and she's always, you know,
before she did anything herself, she's already got all this shame, this inherited shame, you know. So what do you do with that? So it's a really interesting kind of dynamic there.
And she was, when you said about her being brave, I mean, she was the one who shopped her own uncle, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more important to Emma than her family.
Yeah,
it's all family. She sees when I first started playing her, I talked a lot to Julie Beckett, who was the exec producer at that point, one of the executive producers, and we talked about Emma's kind of her selfishness and her that sort of attitude of white noise, white noise, white noise, something about me, white noise, white noise, white noise. And it really is that. But I think once she committed to Ed and she had her kids, they're really extensions of herself. And she has that kind of my family, my family, my family. Yeah. Nothing else is really relevant, you know.
Yeah.
Her business is relevant. She loves that. But because that's herself. But do you know what I mean? It's really like, to be brutal about it. I really love Emma. I love her.
Yeah.
But she is that, there's nothing she won't do. And she's, you know, she saved Christmas a couple of times for her kids.
And it was the best Christmas ever. Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. No, it's lovely. It's really lovely. But she's brave. When it comes to her family, she's brave. Yeah.
And also she props Ed, because Ed has far more wobbles than she does.
Yeah.
And I know she's also had to sort of get over his slightly chauvinist, what do you mean you're earning more money than I am? I shouldn't have to rely on you, blah, blah, blah. He's really struggled with that, hasn't he?
Struggled with that, which I thought was a really lovely kind of... He's such a good guy, but even he has these little foibles, you know? And of course he does. He's this man in this world, and it's all very simple for him. And he's always had that, with all the poverty line and everything, he had that, I should be able to provide, that emasculated feeling for not being able to provide. And then when Emma... You know, first of all, it was like, yeah, your pin money kind of thing. And then it's like, oh, hang on. This is a threat almost, which is just, you know, I mean, it boggles my mind. But you can sort of see how he'd come to think that.
So the animosity with Kirsty, you think is a sort of a residual, you might be as good at this as I am, and so therefore you may replace me because I'm disposable and other people aren't, sort of thing.
She might have a less complicated friendship with Fallon. She might be easier to kind of... She's got more kind of... She's a career girl, isn't she? Mm. She's not tied down with a family. Yeah. And so is Fallon. And so there's that... She's always feeling... I think Emma probably is that sort of girl where she... You know, she was always the third in a group of friends.
Yeah.
It feels like that. That yes. She was always like, don't leave me out. But she was always the one that the girls at school would, you know, not you anymore kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's terrified of that happening because it was her and Fallon. That's lovely. Mm. And then Kirsty's going to come in. What? And so it's just, it's really lovely having these little jibes every now and again. Just being like, no, can you just leave us alone, Kirsty? We've got this covered. Thank you. Yeah.
It was the whole tablecloth debacle, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
But she didn't have to give Nick a hard time.
I know. But then Nick hit George. I think it took her so long to forgive that.
Mm.
Oh, you don't hit someone else's kid. No. You don't hit your own kid. I mean, come on. But yes, it was a very complicated one with Nick, I think, because she's... I think she had that when her and she was happy with Ed. She's so, you know, she made the right choice eventually and had this thing sorted with Will. And I think it took her ages to get to the point where she accepted that she wanted Will to be happy with someone else.
Yeah.
I think she really wanted to be with Ed and for Will to be sort of wanting her, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that was a difficult dynamic to know that he really was never gonna, he was over her completely. And he was with another woman. He had a new family. And that Nick, you know, has her own demons and is a very particular sort of girl.
Hmm.
And isn't particularly easy, I think.
I do like the way at the moment with them all living in the same house.
Yeah.
Emma's kind of taken on the Clary mantle with Joe.
Yeah.
And she just says, oh, brilliant. Come on, Joe. And it's just kind of like trying to prod him off the sofa or cheer him up or stop him doing something wildly unsuitable with a ferret somewhere or something. And it's kind of just very, she's quite maternal with him, but also she doesn't take any nonsense either. She just, she knows exactly what he's like.
He's kind of one of the kids, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. A big, old, smelly kid.
Yeah, ferrety man. It's just glorious they're all back on Grange Farm. I just love it. Absolutely love it.
So what point in the storyline did you take over from Felicity Jones?
So I took over in January 2010, I believe. So at that point, she'd not been heard for a year. She'd been sort of out the back or pushing the kids to bed.
For a year.
And then she came in and had a conversation with Pip, who was at that point played by Helen Monks.
Right.
And that was my first scene. Oh, it was terrifying.
What?
But absolutely terrifying. Because I, like I said, always been a listener. I'd always been a fan. And I'd noticed in the past when people had changed and been really bothered by it. And I was so nervous to get the voice right and to get the character there. And, you know,
Emma's voice is one of my favourite aspects of The Archers.
Is it?
Absolutely. Have you heard Harriet Carmichael, Shambridges, who can do your voice?
Can she? No, I haven't.
Yeah. I'll send you a recording
Amazing.
Of it.
Would you? I'd love that.
Harriet is a genius. And we do a little advert where she's talking about... Juicy Couture tracksuits, and she says, "Well, I can carry it off, but Nick can't." Sort of, there's this, you know. But Harriet's voice is absolutely spot on. But it's a real blend of Susan and Clary.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. But I love the way that you've softened Susan and made her. It's Susan's voice, but it's kind of less spiky and prickly and slightly more seductive as well. It's a lovely voice. It's such a good accent.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
How do you decide what the voice is going to be? Do you just listen like mad to the person before? At what point do you think, I'm not doing an impersonation here. I've got to make this my own. But
yeah, so I think I listened to, I think I had two omnibuses that were sent to me by Julie when they were sort of considering me for Emma. And I just listened to those nonstop for a couple of weeks and learned her voice. And I learned it like an act, you know, like you would at drama school or whatever, yeah, like as an accent, wrote it all out phonetically, that exactly what sounds where, try and find out where it sits in the vocal tract and all that kind of stuff, you know, and got really technical with it. And I just sort of knew Emma inside out, like everyone does, you know, with, she's a year-ish older than me, and she's been, you know, I'd been listening, well, properly, I was listening with, around that storyline when, with the, Ed and Will, and that got me listening. And so I'd grown up with these people, like so many people do. And so I did know her. I didn't particularly like her as a listener, but it was, Julie talked to me about it and said, you know, there is a breathy quality. It is quite rooted though. She's quite kind of, it's not this kind of up in your head voice.
Yeah.
And it's this blend of, Felicity spent apparently a lot of time with Charlotte, who plays Susan, and mimicked her voice and was sort of like, how would that happen if you were more of a kind of, if you were younger, and you had these other influences, but you're her daughter, how would you speak? And so she blended, she was the one that did that brilliant blending. I just copied it.
Because she has got a bit of a vocal, it's like a vocal creak with a breath as well, isn't it?
Yeah, which, exactly.
And the vocal creak is a very, this decade kind of,
exactly,
her age group, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that's something that Felicity has in her voice. So she was sort of melding her own voice, because I think she's originally from Birmingham, with Charlotte, who's from Birmingham, but you know, making it Ambridge. And so, yeah, when I took over, I was really strict to, I would write the phonetics above each line, and I really didn't want to mess this up, kind of thing. And I would listen back when it aired and be really brutal with myself, be like, oh, that didn't sound quite... But there
you
were
must
a few
have driven
times...
yourself mad if you were doing that.
Oh,
for
I do. I do drive myself mad. I'm such a perfectionist. It's nuts. But I've sort of let that slide a bit. There were a few times, though, in studio when Charlotte at the beginning was like, oh, it was like having Felicity by me when we were in studio, which was really encouraging. So those sorts of things made me really kind of chill out about it, because I was just so worried. I was sort of blocking myself, you know? So after a while, I did sort of soften, and I started to trust that her voice was just there. And it is now. I mean, this all sounds so kind of calculated, and it's been quite a natural process.
It doesn't sound calculated. I think it just sounds like somebody who really understands the character.
I do love her now. I really do.
Yeah, well, you can
see. She's awesome.
Yeah, you can see that, because now when she's being snarky, you can forgive her. Because she's grown up, but before when she was just flopping around like a spoiled little sod sometimes, then
she
was, you know, less easy to sort of,
but isn't that you know, it's another part of the Archers being so true to life, you know. It's quite hard to love a teenager sometimes.
I've got
and
one
she
it's
has
very
grown
hard
up
yes
and, right. she's grown up so much, and because it's all done so in such real time, you get to it's almost invisible, and then you look back a few years and think, oh god, yeah, she's really matured.
Yeah,
she is this wife and mother of two kids, and has started up this business with Fallon, and she's in such a different place. And everything she's been through, the Archers are so clever, the writers are so clever about not having these sort of flip-flop character turns, you know, development and then undoing all of that. And you know, if this was, you know, a very fast turnaround soap that was after ratings and was relying on those ratings to keep going, then, you know, I'd probably have murdered Will, and me and Nick might be together, you know. But we've got this luxury with the Archers that it is this institution, and it's sort of trusted to do everything in real time and be really real and that's so beautiful. You get to really live this other life. It's bizarre.
How do you get on with Charlotte Martin, who plays Susan?
Oh, I love her. She's so great. I mean, I have to say everyone in the cast is really lovely. And it's so... I've done a lot of radio, luckily. I've been very lucky since I came out of drama school in 2009. That was my first job, was a bunch of radio stuff, which led to The Archers. And everyone on it tends to just be so nice. There's no ego and there's just... coziness and loveliness.
Aww.
And it attracts really lovely people to it. And but Charlotte is a dream. She's so nice. She's so glamorous. She's just so
and she's a therapist as well. She's so un-Susan. It's unbelievable.
And she runs all the time and she always comes into studio with like perfect manicures and like amazing hair and smelling great and beautiful makeup and such nice jewelry.
She's coming on later on this month, so I'll tell her that she is your style icon.
I love her. Yes, she is. She
style
is.
Style icons. You've got a big Audrey Hepburn thing going on, haven't you?
Oh God, I wish. I do. Every so often, I get told by very, very lovely people that I pay a lot of money now, but I do. She's always been a massive. I mean, like she is for everyone, I think. Massive icon.
No, I was looking at your publicity shops earlier and everything, and I thought, yes, it's definitely a kind of a... So are you, you're not going to clear off like... well, not yet, anyway. You're not going to clear off like Felicity and go and be a Hollywood star just yet, are you?
Unless the powers that be kill me, you know?
We won't let them kill you. You're fine for a while, don't worry.
I love it, and I love going there. And I think they're very flexible about... allowing other people to do work. I've just been at the National. I finished it in March, but it was so just a dream job. I was doing a role in a play called Waste by Harley Granville Barker with Charles Edwards in the lead, and that was just so glorious. I've never been at the National before, and quite a few Archers members. Have and it's mm. and so there's a lot of great work that gets done by the Archers cast, and I was just so pleased to go and work there and make it work being in the Archers. They're very accommodating to me. I've been very lucky, but no, I love the Archers. I don't want to leave.
Good. And as long as you keep shouting at Rob in the way that you did, you're not going anywhere. One of the bits that we all loved was the fact that even when the mic had come back to David and Jazza carrying on their chat, you could still hear Emma in the background going, and another thing!
It was brilliant. It was brilliant.
Just imagine, like, you know, when people talk about the hairdryer, you know, Rob having his hair blown back by Emma's invective. It was great. Because you suddenly got a load of people on Twitter going, way, didn't you?
It was amazing. Twitter went nuts. I was so excited.
So what would you say? I'm not asking for any storyline spoilers, partly because I know you don't know them anyway. But
no idea.
What would you personally, where would you like to see Emma in 5 years' time?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Well...
Grey Gables, I think, should be
F. Oh, that would be awesome. That would be great. Yeah, having some sort of business empire in the village.
A status.
How old will the kids be in 5 years? They'll be sort of, George will be a teenager, won't he? So it'll be rocky times, possibly.
Well, if he carries on his kleptomania, which we think he probably...
Oh, my God. But at least he's not, you know... He's been through some tough times already, but then you would, wouldn't you? I mean, they all need to go into therapy.
Yes.
Every one of them.
Everyone on the Archers does. There isn't any family
backgrounds. No, exactly. Louisa was saying to me, who plays Helen, that, you know, she just reads the scripts and thinks, why aren't these people in therapy? They just all need so much therapy. Helen and Henry. Oh.
And Pat as well. Pat needs about a year and a half.
They need so much. That was something that I thought was really lovely of with Sean O'Connor's kind of tenure, was that he really brought the damage of losing John really to the fore with that family. It had been bubbling away under the surface for years, and it was just so real how that, you know, how do you get past that? You never get past that. How do you?
Well, you do know families, don't you? Where the entire family's been frozen in time from an untimely death,
And
20 years on, they, you know, it's like it still happened yesterday. Nobody's actually made any progress mentally since the thing.
No, because you can't do anything. Just shut down. That's it. And just carry on with life, carry on with life. But you've got this huge, you know, well of pain that's not being dealt with. I mean, isn't that just Helen?
Yeah, absolutely. And also she was absolutely foul to, that was one of the best bits, I think, when she was foul to you when you were pregnant and she was busily telling you how you should be eating and how you should be. But Emma was so patient with her.
Yeah.
She didn't lose her rag, which was kind of, to me, one of the biggest indicators that she was growing up, because she could actually keep a lid on it and not fly off the handle like she would normally do.
Yeah, and she's always really respected Helen and looked up to her. And so I think, but she knows that, you know, I think she looks at her and thinks, wow, I'm actually all right. Mm. You know, she's quite damaged. And
I may not be going to inherit a farm and a dairy, but not that. Yeah.
My mum might have gone to prison, but you know, all my sibling is alive and we're actually much more functional. I think the grandees as a whole look at the Archers and all the other, you know, moneyed families in the village and sort of think, phew, I wouldn't be them.
Yeah.
It's very
easy,
isn't it?
Look at the Orphages, for crying out loud. I mean,
well, I was gonna say, whew.
Not all the Albion kitchens in China would I be genuinely.
No, God, no.
So, you cleverly dodged my question. Where would you like to see her in 5 years?
I think running the village somehow. I think having she'd probably take MP solace
for South
in work.
Dorsetshire, she'd be great.
Oh, God, that would be amazing. I'd love that. That would be so good. I don't know how many book smarts she has, though, to be fair.
No.
Not sure if she really cares about the outside world that much.
No.
But I think her business, I want her to grow with that. And I mean, selfishly, I want her to have a lot of drama. Mm. I don't want her to be happy and silent.
Talkative and upset. That's what we want.
Yeah. Lots of rocks. But I want her to be happy with Ed. I really love their marriage. And I want them to be together and solid.
Yeah.
You know, with their ups and downs.
Yeah.
Oh.
Brilliant. That was fantastic, Emerald. Thank you so much for talking to me. Well done for bollocking Rob so spectacularly.
Thank you so much. It's my absolute pleasure coming on and bollocking Rob.
She sounds lovely.
She is. She is.
And properly excited to be interviewed by you.
She just really, really loves Emma. She really does. And I think it, you know, she genuinely wants any opportunity to sort of to big up Emma, because poor old Emma's had such a lot of flack over the years, one way or another.
Well, that, she's
trying to sort of put the record straight.
That was good. Talking about putting records straight.
Yes.
Emma and I made a record.
I'd heard it. It was great.
Do you want to hear it again?
Yeah.
But now everyone knows the things you did.
The things you did.
Bitch.
Yeah.
Rich.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, go on.
Go on, call me whatever,
call
you,
me
like.
Whatever you like.
That's just your style, isn't it? Picking on women, you bully them and push them around. Now you can't deal with it when one of them dares to fight you back.
When one of them dares to fight you back.
That's right.
But now everyone knows
now
the things you did.
Everyone knows the things you did.
Rich.
Yeah.
Bitch, yeah. Bitch, yeah. Bitch, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he wouldn't dare touch me. He's just a sad, pathetic bully.
What did you call me?
Never come back!
Yeah, well, I know just how to deal with you.
You dare lay a finger on me. Lay a finger on me. If you had a shred of decency, you'd get out of this village and you would never come back.
And you would never come back.
Evil, hypocritical bitch.
Yeah.
But now everyone knows
the things you did.
But now everyone knows the things you did. Everyone knows the things you did.
Everyone knows the things you did.
Bitch, yeah. Bitch, yeah. Bitch, yeah. Bitch, yeah. Bitch, yeah.
Dare.
You must be out of your mind.
Ooh, you must be out of your mind.
You must be out of your mind.
You call her mad after what you did to her? To what you did to her?
How dare you?
What? You're drunk. You need to leave.
You don't tell me what to do.
Oh, yes.
Just that. Get your hands off me!
Sorry, we're not giving you the chance.
You got him,
Jazz.
Yeah,
fire
good
up.
Riddance.
Get off, bitch.
Yeah, that is should be the Christmas single, I think. Christmas number one.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first?
Sarah from Cambridge, first time caller in Aurora.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Sarah here from Cambridge, first time caller in Aurora. I just wondered if anyone else was feeling really gutted to hear that Hayley had got a new fella. I think I must be a wistful romantic, but I think deep down I realised that I had all along been hoping for them to get back together again. That, you know, Roy and the kind of sad, pathetic figure that he cuts at home alone, not doing anything really other than watching the television, having a cup of cocoa, working, just hanging around. I just thought at some point it would all come good and, you know, Hayley would realise and Roy would realise and there'd be a period of reflection and the whole kind of debacle, tent camping, Elizabeth and all of that would just be forgotten. And I just used to feel so happy when I heard, you know, Hayley talking about how she cared for the children and all the stuff with being a mum to Phoebe, and they were such a robust and together family and loving couple and everything. I hadn't really realised, but when she said, or when we heard that she was seeing somebody, I just felt a bit sad. Anyway, onwards and upwards. Yeah, here's hoping now that Roy finds somebody. That's it. Bye-bye.
Can I just say, I need to admonish Sarah. She didn't really go through all the steps.
I've only given people 2 minutes. If they go through all the steps, that's like 1.5 minutes.
Well, okay. I know I'm a big softy, but people have a special dispensation when it's their first call. Doesn't mean they can drone on forever. But they can definitely...
I just put my neck on the line with all manner of draconian rules, and then you go, oh, I don't mind.
No. I'm saying they have a special dispensation first time. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Well, Sarah is soft and whimsical like you. She has always hoped that Hayley and Roy might get back together. I was quite surprised when she talked about this Luke with the dog.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, this is no. But then quite often, that's kind of a trigger for the couple to get back together, isn't it?
Yeah.
If somebody starts on in a soap, if somebody starts talking about a new person, everyone gets very protective of the old person. And then they meet the new person and they decide they don't like them. And then they start lobbying for the first two people to get back together again. So do not give up hope, Sarah. Mm.
And there's nothing like going with somebody new after you've had a long-standing relationship with somebody to realise, the grass isn't greener on the other side. And because, you know what? The old one kind of got you, didn't they? For all of their faults, they understood you, put up with you and your nonsense. And it gets tiring having to wear your best underwear for the first one.
Farting. Not farting, that kills you. Then you never go to the lavatory as well. No, I don't poo. Never. No. Mm-mm.
Well, exactly. So, Sarah, let's not give up all hope anyway.
No. Wouldn't you rather see Roy back with Hayley than with bloody Kate? That was all a bit, wasn't it? Yes.
But this is this Kate, I can deal with. She sounds so reasonable.
She, you know, she was getting on my wick saying, oh, 39 is so young, so old. I was thinking, oh, shut your face. But, yes, it's, I don't know what's, is it just the fact that she's actually done something that seems to be relatively successful? Even though she did have to rope in her entire family, ex-husband and the entire village to help her do it and stole most of the furniture. But, you know, is it that? Does she actually feel some sense of sort of value now of herself or something? So she's not trying to create drama around herself. I don't know. But I was thinking, who is this?
I just hope that we get old Kate back. And I hope that new Kate isn't Alice. Because
yes.
I enjoyed Alice being a little bit of a geek. Her and Chris having their little thing. But obviously we know that there's going to be some turbulence there in that marriage. But like Kate should be Kate. And Alice, Alice.
Yeah. Alice is now, as I said in the monologue, Alice is now sounding more Kate than Kate, which is very disturbing. Anyway, it's usually Hayley that sets Kate off, isn't it? So if Hayley does come back with this Luke the Puke, whoever he is, then that will set Kate off nicely, I would imagine. We can stand by for a little Kate tantrum. Yokel Bear!
Hello, Dumstum. It's Yokel Bear here calling from the rolling hills of Yokelshire. I want to talk about Hootie Jill's birthday party. I'm not really on Jill's side on this one. Get over yourself, Hootie. We've all had birthday parties where somebody's turned up that you don't like, or somebody's brought somebody along and you thought, God, what have you bought that git for? I mean, I had an ex turn up to one of my birthday parties, and not only that, he brought his wife with him. So, you know, just get over yourself, Jill. It could be worse. So, yeah, not really on her side. I mean, she should have known that there was a chance that Pip was going to bring her, you know, boyfriend. No matter what you think of him, and he is a git, and it's all probably going to go hideously wrong. But to kick off like that, God's sakes, Jill, get some cake down your gob and just take it. So, yeah, I wasn't impressed by that. You might have gathered.
I actually have sympathy with Jill.
Go on.
Yo, you don't agree with me, do you?
Go on.
I have sympathy with Jill. Steve, later on, agreed with Yokel Bear and said, wasn't Jill churlish and horrible to Pip? But Witherspoon agreed with me. I think it's not as if Jill has made any secret of the fact. If she had just been sort of sly about it and just muttered about Toby without being upfront about it, and she just sort of wittered about him to Carol Toboggan and not actually said it to anybody. But she has said, I dislike him. I don't want you. I wish you weren't going out with him. I don't want to see him. I don't want to talk to him. I don't think he's a nice person and I don't like him. Why would you then think that it was a good idea to invite him? It's not like it was Pip's party and Jill was going to be there along with Toby. It was Jill's party in the house. It's not even like it was in the village hall and the whole village was invited.
Lucy.
What?
Jill's reaction was so wildly... It was just wild. But I'm going to back up and do one of these. Because I thought that so tripped everybody up. David and Ruth said it. You know, where the hell did that come from? We had no idea she felt that strongly. Us as the listeners had no idea. We knew that she didn't like him. Or at least she had misgivings. Let's put it that way. She had strong misgivings. And she had talked about, you know, you're messing around with a fair brother. She'd seen him roll out there, you know, in the middle of the night, etc. Out of Pip's cottage. And she doesn't like him. But we know this is a little bit to do with Elizabeth and Elizabeth's affair.
Yeah.
But it's everything to do with Phil's first wife.
Yes, absolutely.
And I just thought that was brilliant because her reaction was irrational. And the very fact that she says, well, you know what? It's my party. I don't care. I just thought, you know what, Jill, you're so wrong. But this is just brilliant. Because it's connecting us all the way back to the 1950s. Now, this is a plea which goes out to you, Cosmo. Did we really have storylines after the death of Grace that where Jill said, I feel like I'm second best, that you are still in love?
We did, because I had to write about it.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Well, just goes...
She struggled to feel like she sort of felt like she was competing and then just sort of settled down and said, well, ultimately it was kind of, well, I'm here now. I am who I am, and I'm not second best. I'm just different, and that's it. But she never felt, because she moved into the house, and all that you know, felt like it belonged to somebody else.
Okay, and I presume that these storylines were in the 50s and the 60s, because by the time I'd come into it,
is why Carol Toboggan knows so much about it, because that was when she was in it as well.
Mm. Well, again, hand clap. I just thought it was brilliant because it completely blindsided everybody, whether you were an archer in that party or whether you were the listener. You had no idea she would react in that way.
Yeah.
Pip was knocked sideways and was just like stunned. And I just loved every minute of it.
That David and Ruth said, oh, well, we better make allowances for her. She is 86, you know. I thought, sod off, she's better organised and more with it than most people, you know, my age. Don't say, oh, she's going senile. Just because you don't like somebody and you're old doesn't mean that you're senile.
It's a senior moment in the nicest possible way of saying that you have a senior moment, not that you're using your marbles. It's just that it's somebody who's older and you've got to give them respect. He's got to 86
and thought, do you know what? I don't want to have to spend any more of my life with people I don't like. And I think, fair enough.
Mm. Or anybody just called Fair Brother. Doesn't matter whether she, you know, really, whether they're nice people or not. But I just thought it was brilliant. I literally, if I'd have been eating a bacon sandwich, it would have fallen out of my mouth. Seriously. This was, for me, this was more shocking, or at least as shocking.
I'm going off the roof.
Oh, that. Well, I was never a Nigel fan. I would have pushed him off the roof myself. But this was as shocking as the stabbing.
Really?
I didn't at all see it coming. Whereas at least with that, there's a certain amount of traditional build-up of tension.
So something was going to happen. Out of a clear blue sky, didn't
exactly.
It?
Yeah. Exactly. And I just, when I got to the end of the show, I went, you know what? I did applaud. I stood up, I saluted, and I applauded. I went, wow. Jill Archer, good for you. Good for you. You're wrong, but good for you.
I think she was right. Good on her, I
said. No!
When I'm 86, no.
Rude. It's just absolutely rude.
When I'm 86, I just want a troupe of male go-go dancers. No one else. That's it. Steve Parrott now.
Hello, Lucy, Royfield and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Steve the Parrott here. First time caller in, but I did contribute Tweet of the Week to Menzel. I think I'm a Nigel or a Mrs. Antrobus. I do prefer the latter, as I'm a country person at heart, and I do like to get in touch with my feminine side. Just a short plot prediction. I reckon there has to be a denouement to the Dark Lord storyline, and I think the scriptwriters might be setting us up for one of two issues. Either the horrific thought that Rob will take his own life, plus that of Giddy Jack, or that he will snatch Giddy Jack and make a break for the border. Of the two, I would expect the second, as I'm assuming that narcissists like themselves far too much to end it all. Also, if he goes for the border option and gets caught, he'll be in the slammer for a few years, which is a clean end for a while. That's it. Told you it was short. Keep up the good work.
Yes, it is. Yes, he is definitely, Rob is definitely heading to, we're 3 days into insanity country, I think. And now he's been exposed to everybody. He's kind of got nothing else to lose because there's nobody left to con. He's trapped. And that's when, as we keep saying, people like him get very dangerous. I agree, as a narcissist, he would imagine in his head, he would make sense of it by saying he was saving Giddy Jack by nicking him and running off. So I think it's highly likely. I also think he'd try and take Henry as well. I don't think he'd happily just take Jack. I think he'd try and take both of them. Yes, absolutely. I agree. And I'm dreading it. And I do hope it's not going to be anything ridiculous on, you know, Christmas Eve when they get abducted or something like that, because that would just be too unpleasant and dramatic for words. After the year we've had, we want a nice, quiet Christmas Eve. Scriptwriters, thanking you.
Well, you know they've already wrote it, so there's no point unless you're talking about Christmas 2017.
Well, I probably am, aren't I? I don't know. But we all like to think, don't we, that somehow we have some kind of, you know, we don't like to imagine that it's actually done 3 months before. We kind of like to think that it's, you know, slightly more kind of spontaneous than that, which is ridiculous. I know. Mm. Next, Steve.
What do you mean next? I haven't even dealt with this. There's points I wanted to make, woman.
Come on then.
Right.
Make them.
I was chatting to somebody, but completely and utterly unrelated to anything Archers this weekend. Now, they are a bit of a mental health expert. And what they said to me, 1 minute. What's up, Mum? Yeah, coffee would be great.
All right. Please?
Please, Mother.
Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
All right, let me say that. So they are a mental health practitioner. And so we were having a chat because it's one of my kind of latest bugbears. It's about male mental health issues.
Yeah.
And we were chatting on. And specifically talking, and we kind of slightly went off topic, but and we ended up talking about interviews with people who are who have been arrested on suspicion of being paedophiles. So we slightly went off, but invariably 99 times out of 100 you're dealing with men again.
And
actually that within the first I think it was 24 hours of them being accused and or arrested, that they have basically, in effect, they're on suicide watch.
Yeah.
Because the world has just come crashing down.
Yeah.
Bringing this all the way back round to Rob, I don't want this to be the outcome for Rob, purely for dramatic purposes. In real life, I'd want to lynch him and hang him from the nearest oak tree overlooking the River Am. However, somebody in Rob's situation, the chances of them actually committing suicide would be ridiculously high because they've been socially unmasked. It isn't just legally, because he can still have the internal fiction, as you kind of pointed out, if not last week, the week before, that his wife has, you know, has flirted with the judge and colluded, etc. Still have that. But all the other levers whereby he gets a measure of self-worth and validation have been taken away, of which the cricket team's a big one for Rob. It's a massive one for Rob. That's been pulled away. And then we've got to presume, and I know I'm holding myself as a hostage to fortune here, but you've got to presume that he's going to have the job offer rescinded.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, his world is crashing.
Yeah. And I
couldn't happen to a nicer bloke.
Very true. But as a man in kind of classic terms, you're judged on basically three things. Do you have a relationship? Do you have a career? And then are you a father? The answer to all of those is going to be no for Rob. So he's has a high probability of actually going postal or just committing suicide.
It won't be suicide. I don't think narcissists commit suicide. As Steve says in his call, he thinks he's too important for that. He would never see his life as worthless. He would see the people around him as dangerous and a threat to him. He would never demean himself enough to think that his life was worthless.
You're probably correct. But then you had narcissists who feel that they've got nothing more to live for, or that the rug has been pulled from underneath them. Aren't they the type of men who then take themselves out and their loved ones?
The force of their hatred for the person that they see as threatening them is so extreme that they would actually sacrifice themselves to hurt the person that they feel has hurt them.
Yikes. Well, let's hope that none of that happens. Number one, because I just want everyone to love each other and have fleshy marshmallows. That's my position in life. But number two, for dramatic reasons and for plot reasons, we should have some lingering presence of Rob as a returning bad smell in the village, you know, every 18 months or so.
Yep. Talking of bad smells, it's bye-bye, Steve. Sorry, Steve, not really.
Good afternoon, Dumpty Dum. It's Steve here. Wasn't Jill churlish and horrible to Pip? I thought she should have bitten her lip and said, you know, bring him along. You know, they're in a relationship now. I know Jill doesn't approve, but, you know, I'm like, with Royfield, I think they both have feelings for each other, and I won't be surprised if Pip and Toby last. One thing on Dumpty Dum, well, a couple of things on Dumpty Dum. Please don't stop the swearing. I mean, not gratuitous effing and blinding for the sake of it, but the odd swear word slipped in at the right moment is just sublime. That lovely Irish woman who calls in, who says shite all the time. I mean, you can't edit those out. I mean, even if it does give you a 15 or 18 classification on the podcasts, you know, let it in. We're all adults here, and if there's Dumpty Diddlers listening in, well, it's an education for them. Interesting to see that Kate and Roy are back together. Well, not back together, but it looks like they're going to be indulging in the Calcutta quadrille. And Kate is sounding very reasonable. She's sounding like she's actually grown up a bit. And in sharp contrast to her sibling Alice, who seems to be becoming the social climbing bloody Sloan from hell. I thought the interview with, what's his name, Tom, was quite good. They put him through his paces. I wish they'd pushed him on like GM crop things. I, for one, wish he'd gone down for that. I mean, Kirsty. You know, bloody eco-warriors. Yeah, that's it, really. Anyway, that's me. I'm just about to have a little drink. I shall see you all later. Mwah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Mwah. 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 You go first, not me. No, you go first. You go first. Mwah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Mwah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, he thinks Jill was churlish. I do not. The thing is with Toby, she could have actually let him bring... Jill doesn't need to put everyone off Toby or let everybody know what a git Toby is. If you give Toby enough rope, he hangs himself perfectly happily just through the natural force of his idiotic character. I think it was heavy-handed, yes. And I do genuinely think that in your 86th birthday, you can have who the hell you like. But I think Jill feels the need to go around sort of urging everybody, you know, why don't you all feel like like I do about him? And that's the bit she's got to stop, because but you know, people will come to their own, will reach entirely the same conclusion about Toby after 10 minutes of his company.
Yeah, but that at all wasn't the reason why Jill did what she did. It's had nothing to do with his character. David, three quarters of the fact that David doesn't really like him is because he's an arse. But there is a part of him which is
if you think it had been Rex, Jill would have reacted the same.
Absolutely the same. Absolutely really? The same. He's a fair brother.
Right.
She kept on saying, yeah, you know, fair brother. Fair brother. She didn't say Toby fair brother.
No, you're right. Mm. And also, Steve, don't worry. We would never, ever edit a Maeve in the Big Press's shite. Don't worry. We will always have that. the swearing will continue, particularly regional accent swearing, which is our favourite.
Well, that doesn't even count, does it, if it's regional?
No, it's different.
And it's just colloquialisms.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Has your mum brought you coffee yet?
My mum, you've probably heard her. She's walked in the room and
hello, mum.
She can't hear because I've got the headphones on. But why don't you? But I'm going to call her over. Mother, come over here. Come over here, mum.
Why?
Because Lucy, look, we're just recording a show, and Lucy has said hello. So I'm going to take the headphones off. You can have a brief conversation with her. Say hello because you just said
hi,
hello.
Lucy.
Hello, Mrs. Brown. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And yourself?
Good. I'm fine. Thank you for bringing him coffee, keeping him going.
Well, if I don't, then he'll probably go all day without a drink.
That's very
and
true.
Get dehydrated, and then I'll have to run into the hospital with him.
That's a bit dramatic.
A bit drastic.
Well, you never know, do you? Okay, nice talking to you.
And you. Take care.
Bye, Mum. Thanks for my coffee.
You laugh exactly like your mum.
Oh, do I?
Your laugh is exactly the same. You wait till you play it back. Right. With a spoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, looking at our one-quarter-done, still-under-renovation-after-4 weeks of work kitchen. For the first time, we have sympathy for Jennifer and the construction woes that she experienced a couple of years ago. One person for whom I don't have sympathy is Pip. She knew that her grandmother did not like Toby, and yet she went ahead and invited him to Jill's birthday dinner without asking her first. What she should have done was arrange for a quiet get-together of the three of them, accompanied by tea and some nice scones with Jill's favorite jam. Pip's behavior was a supreme example of her self-centeredness. It was Jill's birthday gathering, not a Sunday dinner, and she had every right to invite whom she wanted. And shame on David and Ruth as well for not understanding that and for chalking up Jill's anger and disappointment in Pip to some incipient dementia. We all would hope to be as active as Jill is at age 86, which is also my mother's age, and she's much grumpier than the older Archer. But overall, it was a wonderful week in Ambridge, with so many old friends reappearing. It was as if they had returned from 40 years of wandering in the desert. I say, welcome back. The 7 days began with the cricket team snubbing Rob, and ended with a heartfelt apology from Susan to Helen. It was very touching to hear, so hats off to someone who I usually find quite annoying. And go for your own homemade rejuvenation drink. Kate's just going to rip you off. And is this really the beginning of the end for Rob and Ambridge? It's like believing you've awakened from a bad dream, but oh no, there's the possibility that you're still in the midst of another level of the nightmare. Well, unfortunately, I must now return to the long national nightmare known as Donald Trump. We'll keep you posted on all the latest on Twitter during the week. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis signing off until next time.
He has no sympathy for Pip. Yes, I don't either. She is self-centered. I mean, the Jill thing is equivocal,
no.
But I
just no. Come
is
on,
he is a bit self-centered.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wait on a minute. Jill Archer is a reasonable woman, which is the reason why this is so blindsided everybody.
Yeah.
Imagine if this was Joe Grundy.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Grundy would have had a beef with, I don't know who insert name of the Horribins. There you go. Imagine it's his 85th, 95th, 105th birthday, and somebody brings home a Horribin. You could imagine Joe Grundy going, you know, ooh, blah, 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 and taking great offence. And even though it might have come as somewhat of a surprise, the vehemence of his objection to it, you'd go, well, actually, I could see that coming because Joe has opinions on everybody and half of them are negative, et cetera, et cetera.
And this... But he'd just go right up to them and go, all right, missus, and just say it.
But Jill is just reasonable.
And nice.
So it's completely understandable for Pip to be so utterly shocked by this. I don't think Pip was being selfish at all. As far as Pip's concerned, she has announced to, it has been announced to her parents and to a wider family and to the village that she has a new paramour, right? And because everybody's so reasonable and so nice, she can bring him to a family event. If that was my daughter, I wouldn't have blinked, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. And neither you with any of your kids have sort of brought somebody home because you're a reasonable person, Lucy. The fact of the matter is, Jill Archer has got a problem with the family of the Fairbrothers, regardless of who it is. Rex, Robin, Toby, Tony, doesn't matter what the hell they're called, as long as their name ends with Fairbrother, she don't want to be anywhere near them. This is not Pip's issue at all. What Pip did was totally and utterly reasonable. She's bringing round her new boyfriend to a family do, considering her boyfriend has... It was a family do. Because all of the family are there with their partners.
I don't know.
Well, there's nothing to disagree about. I know you like to have these pretend arguments with me for the sake of the sake of the podcast, Lucy, but come on.
Yeah, well,
Toby's an idiot. He hasn't murdered anybody. He hasn't attempted to rape anybody. The other thing I would say, which is another little bit of script writing genius, is that Chutney Gate foreshadowed all of this. So she had extra beef with him, didn't she? She's like, you know what, idiot can't even...
Chutney, that sounds horrible.
It wasn't that the idiot can't even label... Yeah, but in her mind, he did it deliberately.
Yeah, yeah.
In her mind, this was a Fairbrother plot to undermine her. Which was genius.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Andrew Horn, now.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here. After weeks of dodgy male role models like Titchy Knob and then Toby proving he's not emotionally mature enough for a relationship and Josh and all of that lot, it's good to have a couple of role models coming through. And two this week stood out for me. Johnny, thinking about Tom's interview and getting the panel together, and Neil, the way he reassured Susan with her crisis over the calendar and was trying to help her. I hope he got a serving of chili on the back of that. But yes, good to see. I like that. And then all this Fairbrother stuff going on again. It did make me wonder about the curse of the Fairbrothers, and we touched on this back on the boys episode that we did a few months ago. And I'm wondering whether it goes back to Dan Archer and maybe he wronged a Fairbrother at some stage. Maybe he cheated him at the market or something like that, because the sins of the father will be visited unto the fourth generation. And, well, Phil was blighted by Fair Brethren and Lizzie. And now we come down to Pip, who's going to have her heart broken. Yes, so then one more generation of Fair Brethren and maybe the curse will be lifted. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Lots of nice role models. Neil being nice to Susan, Johnny thinking about the interview. I think that was slightly nuts, the interview thing.
I thought it was utterly bonkers.
Yeah.
Because the thing is...
Light in his face. I love that.
Because the thing is, he's no idiot, is he, Sausage Boy?
No, he's had millions of these interviews.
Exactly. He's gone... So when he was developing the Tom Archer brand of sausages and he took them off to Underwoods, he had meeting after meeting with that buyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's not...
Most of those were in bed, to be fair.
They didn't start off in bed.
They were informal, shall we say. The back of his truck.
Lucy's taking me back to when we first devised Dumpty Dum.
Sorry?
Those were rather informal, weren't they?
They weren't that informal.
No, we did keep our clothes on. Yeah. But, you know, he marketed his sausages, sold his sausages to a prestigious local supermarket / department store, Underwoods. He's going to know how to conduct himself in an interview. If this was Johnny, it would make a whole load of sense. He would need some interview prep. But this is just all manner of bonkersness.
Johnny would need a picture. But, you know, Tom, he knows what he's doing. And Neil was being nice to Susan and saying, no, you are not old and wrinkly and floppy, Susan. You are lovely. Well, all right, then you are old and wrinkly and floppy, but I love you anyway. That was more to the point, wasn't it?
Corking cup of coffee my mother's made me. Though you'd think, considering I haven't had milk in my coffee, Lucy, for what, 15 years, she'd remember that whenever I came home that I had my coffee black, but no, she put milk in it. But, you know, bless her.
She's worried that you might get dehydration and die, as she said.
Because that's quite...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Likely.
To you as well, yes.
All right, let's see everybody the other side of this little short sojourn whereby somebody promotes some stuff.
Hello, Dumdy Dummers. Kat Brown here. If you found life in Ambridge a bit stressful of late, a bit lacking in baking competitions and double entendres that don't involve Lillian entering her gentleman's buttonhole, as excellent as that was, then may I make a very polite suggestion. Search for Soggy Bottoms in your podcasting toolkit and you'll head over to a Great British Bake Off fan podcast. In our latest episode, we interview Anna Tregorin herself, actress Aunt Isabel Middleton, about that storyline and her love of buns. So, if that sounds tempting, add us to your iTunes playlist. Even if we moulder away there like that Nutribullet you bought in 2014, we'll still love you very much, especially if you call in via SpeakPipe. On your marks, get set, speak!
When you don't have a roof over your head...
Build that wall. Build that wall.
There was
Build
nothing marked
wall.
Classified Build on my wall. Emails Build either sent or received.
Build that wall!
I am humbled to have been chosen by the Conservative Party to become its leader.
He said Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the ocean from the perspective of the other.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you. Available from Sainsbury's for the Posher Washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
G'day everyone. What a great week on the Archers, and it just seems that that translates to our forum and also to our Facebook page because we've had some really good weeks on there too. On the forum, we've been talking about Emma and how wonderful she is and that episode. We've also talked about Jill, who had totally flipped out. And there's also been some discussion about the chaise longue. Over on our Facebook page, we have been discussing the cricket match. I'm not a sports fan at all, but I really enjoyed that cricket match, and we all know why. Julie Atkinson said, listen twice and punched the air both times. Let's have the slow hand clap again when he goes into the ball, the shop, Grey Gables, tea room, and every farm he has to visit as part of his new job. Shame on you, Justin Elliott. Mint But No Time said, I am just so proud of the men of Ambridge. I was so delighted and almost in tears when I heard the first clap. I wasn't sure what it was, but oh my, I so enjoyed that. More in that vein on that thread, so get involved if you would like to comment about the cricket match. The next thing that we discussed was then about Jill. I was a bit conflicted because I thought Jill was absolutely right. Pip should not have invited Toby to a birthday tea just because he's her boyfriend. But... And that Pip should have asked. But that was a very un-Jill-like reaction, I thought. I thought my understanding of Jill is that she would have been the perfect hostess, but to discuss it afterwards. Anyway, we decided to discuss it. Alicia Wallace said, I disliked Toby so much. It was the horrible fox and chicken scenario that pushed me over the edge. And my dislike for Pip only grows with her seemingly endless tolerance for his feckless awfulness. I'm with Jill. You get to be a certain age. You don't have to put up with bad people that you hate coming to your own birthday party. Okay, that's a very good point. Janice Pope says, I can never keep the reason Jill has an instinctive dislike for the family in my head, but maybe her losing it was a sign that something else is going on with her. Anyway, it is her 86th birthday. For that reason alone, I reckon she has the right to lose her shizzle. Interestingly, a fair few people did think it might be the start of Jill losing her faculties. Alice Thomas said she was so passive-aggressive. However, I've never liked Jill, to be honest. Find her fairly humorless and takes herself a little too seriously for my liking. She's always seemed very aware of her archer status in the village. So there was also a lot of division around with people like Jill, whether it was like Jill or not like Jill. It's a great thread. So if you would like to get involved in that, that's on our Facebook page. I noticed a post from His Royal Majesty, Kerry Davis, who teased us with the knowledge that he's actually involved in writing some episodes that are stylistic. Now, obviously, my wish is that it would be written in the style of Doctor Who Adventure, and Kirsty will join Peter Capaldi as his companion, and Terry Malloy will make a return as Davros, and Eleanor Bronner as Missy, and of course there have been some others who've been involved with Doctor Who, like Catherine Tate, but I asked for some suggestions. Mike Hatton, get your wrist up, because you suggested German porn. I don't know why. Karen Cunningham, Shakespearean, more love triangles than you can shake a stick at. Kings and heirs aplenty. And Toby and Pip as Romeo and Juliet. Romance sing amidst the cowpats, although Pip is a bit old to be Juliet, but yes, I think that would make a good storyline. Tom Iverson suggested a Life on Mars episode where they investigate Titchy Knob's multiple rapes with all the delicacy of a size 10 Dr. Martin. I thought that was inspired. Valerie Bayliss suggested Dickensian for sure, Justin, Mr. Pickwick, Jennifer, Lady Dedlock, Eddie, Fagan, Rob, Edward Murdstone, Kirsty, Miss Havisham, and Brian Scrooge. Peter Mabbitt said Most Haunted, then we could have the return of Doris, Dan, Walter Gabriel, Sid and Polly. You had some great suggestions, Pete. Really impressive and great fun to read. So if you'd like to get involved in that, that's again on our Facebook page. And then finally, we asked for some favourite phrases of the week, because it was an awesome week for phrases. I Stuck to My Sausages was one of them. You Leave My Chi Out of This. He's using it as an excuse not to move Susan's mangle. Please get involved, and I'll speak to you next week. Facebook or forum, will be there. Hooroo!
Thank you, Millie Bell. That was most awesome. Lucy, can you hit us with some tweets?
I can. First of all, this is a little tweet exchange that made me laugh. So it's not part of Tweets of the Week. It's a little extra tweety thing. It's about animals listening to Radio 4. It was a conversation that started, I think, after the omnibus. Irene Myers PR said, I always miss the name of the guest on Desert Island Discs as our cockatiel Gary kicks off as he loves the theme tune. This was followed by, I love the fact the cockatiel is called Gary. I am Gore Blimey, who said, I have to listen to the Archers on headphones or our dog howls along very loudly to the closing music. Anyway, right. Now we have the proper tweets of the week. David Absalom, who tweets as British Pictures, when he was talking about Kate's Susan and Kate's conversation about Susan going to the yurts. Susan, you need to be properly supervised and on some sort of register.
Oh dear.
She's not that bad. Willful Blindness said, yes, Roy, you do need to move on, given two out of the three women you've bedded have been from the Archer's gene pool. I hadn't thought about that. That is quite grim. The Michael Moran. This was about the conversation between Kate and Roy. It is my contention that a single man living on his own with internet access can get his chi flowing all too bloody freely. I'll tell you what, that chi. Andrew Horn said, I thought Kate said he was cheese blocked. Because she said, oh, well, that's because your chi's blocked. As in your chi is blocked. And he thought she said cheese blocked, as in, you know, you've overdone the cheddar or something. John Reed had Roy saying, Hayley seeing someone called Luke. And Kate said, what's he like? And Roy says, a bit intense, has father issues, uses the force. And
I haven't had a superhero segue in quite some time. And I know you've been watching this. But
Luke Cage.
Yes, Luke Cage. And
it's a bit thumpy.
It was your boy, Exeter Dormouse, that tweeted a picture of Luke.
Yeah.
And it was Luke Cage looking all black and buff and muscular. Yes. Ooh. You know. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
Roy, you're sounding quite excited.
No, well, you know what? Right, the older I get, the would more I can know. Well, I think
would
I know.
Would you help them out if they were one man down?
Can I answer?
Yes.
Seriously, I can appreciate when a man is handsome. Doesn't necessarily do anything for me in the trouser department, but I can definitely look at somebody like Luke Cage and go, you know what, you're a handsome bloke.
Yes.
There you go. What do you reckon to Luke Cage, series?
Funny, isn't it? It's so much more acceptable for a woman to say that they can see that they find another woman beautiful.
No, than it is listen, for absolutely. It's absolutely. Ridiculous. There's all manner of social taboos are just slowly being lifted. But so chatting to Clemcott, he said, as a classic male thing, Roy Field, you were singing Grease and you said that you needed a man and I wondered about you.
Right.
And I was just singing, but that. He remembered and replayed back because socially it is not acceptable for a straight man, or at least it needs to be highly qualified for a straight man to even jokingly say that he needs another man.
Flipping heck.
Flipping heck indeed. Anyway, Luke Cage, the series, do you like it?
It's a bit thumpy for me. And I don't watch the thumpy bits. I put my book up and read in the thumpy bits and I wait until they've stopped thumping. I absolutely love the soundtrack. That is brilliant. And I've bought nearly everything on it. It's amazing.
Really?
Yeah. You probably already got everything on the soundtrack because you are cool and I am not.
Not at all. Though I did do a little bit of a Shazam on a couple of things.
Yeah.
I tell you, the soundtrack for me is good. However, I think it feels somewhat belaboured the way that they've shoehorned in a lot of these great artists who
are
doing...
Oh, the nightclub things.
Yeah. Me, it's a little bit tiring.
Yeah.
So many films.
But they're my favourite bits.
Well, it's just a case of it's Soul Train, isn't it? Oh. You are watching Soul Train. But there are many films which have done integration of artists actually playing their music into a narrative so much better than this. Whereas this is all incredibly staged. they're on the stage. And then you have Cottonmouth, the baddie, who's always peering out from his little vantage point and then looking wistfully because they need to just play this great piece of music for another minute and a half. And because they've paid this classic soul actor to come, so they want their money's worth. But it just, it detracts away ultimately from the drama and the pacing of the drama.
Yeah.
Because you have these 2 minute interludes every bloody episode, sometimes twice an episode. You know me, Lucy, I love me some superhero action. I actually don't like Luke Cage.
Really?
And you know, I love the hero Luke Cage.
He's not very happy. He's a very grumpy superhero.
Well, he's the African-American equivalent to Captain America. And Captain America is all struck with patriotism and doing the right thing and being incredibly noble and being a man out of his time. And it means that you don't have the natural kind of humour that you do with a Spider-Man or the angst that you do from a Batman, because Captain America is just straight. He's just a straight up dude. And Luke Cage is just too stoic for me. He's too noble. And I just find this portrayal of him somewhat boring. However, Luke Cage, the hero in the comics, love. And he's a little bit more believable there. But what they do in the comics, in the last 10 years, he's now married to Jessica Jones and they have a kid. And that's brilliant because they're a pair of supers together. But it's all about their kid. And she and Jessica Jones is like, we know we need to protect the little one. And she's retired from the superhero business because she just wants to be a mother. But all manner of, you know, badness and villains always kind of end up at her door. So she's like literally super mum, you know, giving them a good kick in. But it's all about them as a unit, which is brilliant.
That sounds like The Incredibles.
Well, that's what I was about to say. It's The Incredibles, but much more real. Believable. Yeah. But who knows what little powers the little one's gonna manifest when he gets older. But anyway, people don't pay.
Well, people don't pay.
No, they don't pay. No, people don't tune in to hear reviews about a Netflix original series, do they?
No.
What they want right now here, Lucy, is Tweet of the Week.
It's from The Real Marmaduke.
Mm-hmm.
This is a sweary one. She says, me, Jim, Jazza, Kate and Roy. Is there a terrible minibus crash with the regular six characters all on board? I know, I do. I have spent the last fortnight going, oh, hello, to the radio. We'll have bloody Kathy popping up in a minute.
Mm.
I'm sorry, I've had a nasty cold.
Oh, come on. That'd be too much to believe. Be like Captain Oates returning back into the tent, wouldn't it, if Kathy turned up again?
I'm back. Hello. I only said I'd be going gone for a while. Where have you all gone then?
Loose. Shall we crack on with the end of the show? Because still have some nuggets. There is a massive list. So very quickly, I'm going to say dungeondrum.com. Go there because we've got a shop. Go buy some stuff. iTunes reviews, please send them in.
Yeah.
Now, people have been helping keep our little show on the road. We've had the problem with the Russians. And even today, a Russian tried to sign up. And they couldn't sign up. Yeah. I can actually see. So you actually see they signed up, but they couldn't post anything. So there are many people that helped us with our little Russian problem. And they donated. And I think, Lucy, after 3 weeks of asking for help, we should give this roll call of donators a little bit of a... That's it, you clear your throat. Give them a little bit of a thank you by at least mentioning their names. What do you reckon?
Should we go for it?
Go for it.
Right. Andrew Horn.
Lynn Fuller Love.
Alison Smith.
Caroline Moss.
Catherine Kavanagh.
Claire Belgard.
Lonnie Bahar.
Amanda Hart.
Claire Easter.
Jean Rose.
MJ Gillespie.
Victoria Cole.
Mary Darby.
Valerie Bayliss.
Bronwyn Wood.
Caroline McKendrick.
Claire Asprey.
Claire Howard.
Claire Aitken.
Isn't it funny we had three Claires?
I know.
All together. Denise Tomlinson.
Hannah Barrett.
Jackie Reese.
Jim O'Hara.
K.R. Whitbread.
Leslie Greaves.
Nancy Dickey. Love you, Nancy.
Pam Cruikshank.
Sally Bowditch.
Sally Wood.
Sarah Evans, who's a big superhero fan.
Sheila Snowden, who is not.
Tessa Herring.
Maureen Freiberger.
Quentin Bennett.
Bryn Ranyard.
Catherine Jones.
Christine Scantlebury.
Claire Wainman.
Glenn Alderman,
Helen Palmer,
Janet McKee,
Jenny Allen,
Karen Cunningham,
Martin Greaves, never heard of him.
Oh, thanks, Derek. Rachel Ray,
Sarah Hydes,
Susan O'Sullivan,
Susan Poole,
Tracy Shevin,
Felicity Ann Hope,
Jacqueline Berthoud, thank you, Jacqueline,
Jan Mitchell,
Julie Riley,
Terry Gardner,
Rose Mario.
So thank you all of the above for your wondrous donations, which have helped us to sort out our Russian problem. Work has been a little bit delayed on the website, but I absolutely will get onto it this week in terms of the new developments with our Dum-de-dum 2.0. Actually, it can be Dum-de-dum 3.0 because what we have is 2.0. But anyway, now, we bang on about Patreon week after week. And this is a way for you to donate per show. Now, it occurred to me only after mentioning Patreon for about 18 months that actually it's spelt rather peculiarly. So we should actually maybe kind of spell, say how it's actually spelt. It's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. So that's patreon.com if you would like to become a patron and to donate.
Which, because of Brexit, is now worth about £1.70.
Now, here are all of our patrons in their glory. Sarah Harding.
Jennifer Reber.
Samantha Dean.
Bronwyn Wood.
Claire Howard.
Anne Charles.
Carl Astral.
Di Middleton.
Amy Rose.
Rachel Tolhurst.
Tracy Shevin.
John Burns.
Doug Foynt.
Martin Pickering.
Candida Beeching.
David Martin.
Magic at Mungo's.
Morgan Johnson.
Andy Bent.
Scott Matthewman.
Lorelei.
Claire Steep.
Jean Rose.
Miranda Johnston.
Laura S.
Silver Girl.
Jim Irving.
Sarah Amanda Hyde.
Rosie Taylor.
Barbara Wiseman.
Jan Mitchell.
James Moores. Thank you all. You are all lovely.
Very lovely, lovely, lovely indeed. Ooh. Now, folks, remember to get in contact. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe and get your calls in. Keep them nice and brief. And remember what Juicy Lou said before. We do love you all.
Yes.
But the show is having a certain amount of bloat. if you can't get on SpeakPipe for any reason, you can call in. The great thing is about the kind of calling in, it even works from abroad. Because our caller from Canada, our first-time caller in her from Ontario, she actually called in internationally. It's awesome. It all works. And that number, folks, is 02030313105 if you can't get the SpeakPipe to work. On social media, specifically on the Twitters, we're at Dumdidum. Me, I'm at Royfield. Harriet is at Shambridges.
Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
On the Book of Face, you can find us by simply typing in Dumdidum. Now, Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to hear my little conversation with the man who loves you but hates me?
Well, you're going to put it in anyway, so there's not much point asking me, is there really?
If you'd expressed a really heartfelt conviction that it was not going to add to the sum total of the show, I wouldn't actually put it in.
Well, it isn't.
Nah, it's quite interesting.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, then.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm well. I've got a feeling I'm going to be taken to the cleaners. No, I was going to say, I mean, you've been to the gym with me. You've walked to the train station with me. I regularly annoyed you at
every turn by the sounds of things.
But, do you know, the amount of times I've shouted at, I've not shouted, but I've gone, oh, shut up, Royfield. I did think when you read out my review, and I was quite embarrassed. It did quite endear me to you because you read it out, and I thought, okay. No, I don't hate you. I mean, it's not like that. If you want me to front up and say what I like about Dum-de-dum and what I don't like, sometimes you bug me a little bit, but I'm worried that you and Witherspoon and Andrew Horn and everyone else is going to sort of strong-arm me out of my house, a bit like Rob in The Bull.
No, though, I think you might have to worry about Vicky from Cambridge. So she did leave a somewhat indignant call. Yeah.
Hello, Dum-de-dum. It's Vicky from Cambridge here. I'm quite across Vicky from Cambridge. I'm not calling about the Archers. I'm actually calling about the podcast, or rather, I'm calling about that review of the podcast. The guy, and I do think it's a guy, has got a right to his opinion, of course, but I think he's absolutely wrong. First of all, to say that Royfield's musings aren't very articulate is, frankly, completely incorrect. I love listening to you two whispering on. So the main reason for ringing in was to say please don't change that, because it really is listening to you two nattering on about the Archers, not about the Archers, on topic, off topic, doesn't matter. It's like curling up in the corner of the ball and having a natter with your mates. And when I listen to the podcast on the way home after a shitty day, it's exactly what I need, and it's just the tonic that I need. And the other thing is, he said something about the show being highly critical of the Archers. It's not. It's constructively critical. It's critical when it needs to be, and it's also full of praise at times as well. So whoever it is clearly has only listened to a couple of episodes, or isn't a regular listener. So I hope he does come on the show. I really do. And you know what? If he does, let me come on too, and I'll be Hillary Clinton to his Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, I was a bit worried. I mean, Lucy was a bit upset by it, I think. I mean, she was quite, she was cross.
Lucy's more sensitive than me.
Right.
But then again, that probably plays up to the fact that you said I've got an outsized ego or something.
Yeah, and I stand by that. And Lucy, I was a bit, she did sound a little bit cross and a bit upset. And I don't know if I have a weird sort of, attraction to her, but I was a bit, I was a bit sorry I'd upset her, really.
I think Lucy feels somewhat protective, but I'm quite clear that Lucy's the talent and I'm the bloke who actually produces it. The reading out of your review, I think, was important. Because Dum-de-Dum is supposed to be incredibly informal. Though the show is edited, it's supposed to feel like it's not edited. So if you're going to have that type of attitude whereby when Shambridge comes on, she can say, I haven't got my notes, and, and absolutely deliberately kind of plays up to the fact that it's kind of slightly chaotic. Right. Why wouldn't I read out your review? We ask people for reviews. Yours did somewhat take me by surprise with its venom, and it made me laugh. I just burst out laughing. But my mum wants to know, Clemcott, did you have a childhood that was lacking in warmth and love?
You're kidding. Your mum didn't ask that. She didn't really ask.
Literally verbatim.
Are you serious? Your mum said that. That's funny. Because I'll mention my mum in a minute, because I think my mum would be a listener of your show if it wasn't so potty mouthed and if there wasn't all this innuendo. Well, it's got better. And you can reassure your mum, I had a fantastic childhood. I mean, to be honest, I know you've got a certain script you stick to, and you've got a beginning and middle and end and all that stuff. And one of the end things is, you can write us, I could quote it verbatim, you can write us a review and you can keep this little show on the road and all that stuff. And you sort of trawl for reviews. And to me, it's a bit like fishing for compliments. And I was brought up that you don't fish for compliments. You just let people praise you when you do something good or when you do something well. I think one week you said something like, leave us a really positive review. And Lucy corrected me. You went, I know, we want good reviews or something. Maybe I've got that wrong. And one week I was like, do you know what? I'm going to give them a review. And and then you read it out, and I cringed, to be honest. Thought, oh my God. I think I was harsh when I said that you were inarticulate. That was unfair. I gave you 3 stars. What do you want?
Listen, no. When Lucy was much more upset than me, and I was laughing, I said, well, it didn't give us 1 star, and I said, in effect, the 3 stars are for you. The truth of the matter is, what we do is obviously fueled by social media, and that is our stock currency. If we have a lot of reviews, I said it had to be a good review. You got that the wrong way around. I said any review a few weeks ago. It was Lucy that says, well, we want good ones. And I went, no, we just want reviews. Because the more we get reviewed, the further we go up in the iTunes charts, the more downloads we get. It's as simple as that. And there's a direct correlation between when we started the show and us asking for reviews, and then us stopping asking for reviews. For literally about a year, we didn't ask for reviews. Right. But every now and then, we'd just mention it. And the fact that our traffic, yes, it grew, but we kind of fell down the iTunes charts. So, I think it's one of those things where people kind of, when I say people, I don't mean you, but people don't quite realise the difference between us and a radio show. So we ask for donations. No one has to give us a penny. If they want to give us something, they can. We ask for reviews. People don't have to, because we don't make a living out of this by any stretch of the imagination. But I think between the pair of us, we spend two working days a week probably doing this. Maybe, you know, Lucy's always writing her notes throughout the week, refining them. But, you know, I'll do a little bit of stuff on Twitter. And then Monday / Tuesday is kind of blocked off for us. Mm. So it's a lost leader, and it's supposed to help us do other things, whatever those other things are. But the other thing to say is that when I kind of devised Dumpty Dum, I never dreamt that 2.5 years I'd be still behind the mic, because right. Lucy is the talent, and I say that all the time, and I'm just the sparring partner who tries to keep up with her because she's so incredibly witty and funny. But I am a producer, so on
do
the
you mean, do you honestly mean that, Royfield? You don't think that, you know, walk away, let Lucy do it. Why you know, why are you still
because
still
I, there? Okay. Really mean that. I said to Lucy after doing it for 5-6 months, I wanted to stop doing it. Right. There you go. I've said it more than once. And that's the reason why also we've had Yokel Bear's done a couple of shows, Andrew Horn's done a couple of shows. Me being on mic doesn't further my professional career because I'm not a presenter. Lucy being on mic is completely and utterly different because she has an incredibly sharp wit. As long as people know that I produce the show, potentially I might get, you know, some further work or something else out of it. But me fronting that show each week means little and nothing for me professionally in terms of being a presenter, because I'm actually not one.
You know, you would sometimes talk about children listening, or you'd have a child. I think you've had children phone in before, but that's alongside all these kind of F words and innuendo and stuff. And that just made me feel uncomfortable. And I think there is clearly a market for a companion show to The Archers. I've come around to Dumpty Dum in lots of ways. And partly, I think, because that's eased back. There's a lot less swearing than there used to be, I think. And I don't know why that is, whether you're editing it out or if people are just kind of cleaning up a little bit. And I think it's a better show for it. People like my mum and her friends love The Archers, and I would like to recommend this to them. But then, as Lucy said the other week, innuendo has made Britain great. And if you don't like innuendo, you're unpatriotic. Call me unpatriotic or something. I don't know.
I'm a bit worried because you seem to be getting your Royfield and your Lucy's mixed up because I said that.
That's a little bit worrying because I said I fancied Lucy, so I don't know what that means. No. I mean, and this is what I'm saying. I've stuck with it. Now, something has made me stick with it. And I guess knowing that I was going to talk...
Do you like self-flagellation? Is that what it is?
It might be that. But I have obviously... It has become part of my week. And I do look forward to it. So what is it I look forward to?
Tell me.
What do I look forward to in this 2 hours of hell? I don't know. Do you think it veers off a bit too often from Archer's conversation? But when there is reasonable discussion about The Archers, I enjoy that. You're a funny one because sometimes you drive me slightly crazy. You're quite dogmatic in your views. I mean, you'll be quite strong in them. You know, you were dogmatic that Rob died when he was stabbed by Helen. No, I wasn't.
I was just wrong.
And then I think when you did go off subject about The Archers, you said, you know, when you were talking about Muhammad Ali, you said something like boxing died the day that he retired or something. But maybe I quite enjoy getting annoyed with you, and maybe that's why
I think that's it, isn't it? You're not massively wrong, but I didn't absolutely say that. But in terms of the heavyweight champion of the world bestriding the planet as an icon, yeah. After Muhammad Ali, Evander Holyfield, Larry Holmes never had the stature of Muhammad Ali. They just didn't. He was lightning in a bottle. He came along at the right time politically for black people throughout the globe who were coming off of segregation in America, colonial oppression, and he was a black Superman. And there hasn't been a sportsman of that stature ever since, and definitely not a boxer.
Mm.
So maybe I didn't make the point clearly enough, but I didn't say that boxing died the day that he retired. The fact that the stature of boxing lost its luster.
Well, there is that. But if you ask me what I liked, the fatwa has been lifted and, you know, people are coming on. I really, really enjoyed your interview with Isabel Middleton this week. That was just a really nice listen. What about the accusation that I said it's a bit repetitive, the domestic violence storyline? The writers have done a disservice by taking it down the whole path of the stabbing. How many times have you made that point? I mean, that, you know, I would say that point's been made over and over and over, although I accept that certain people might come on board at different times.
Well, you've just answered my question for me.
That is your reason. Okay, there's your reason, yeah. So the thing is, I'm not really putting a very strong case here for the fact that I dislike Dum-de-Dum. It's got longer, but I must quite like it because when I see it's an extra long show, I'm quite pleased.
You know what? You confuse me. You are a much more complex person than me.
Well, they, and apparently, according to your mother, I had a bad childhood. So, I, you know, did she really say that? She didn't say that.
Well, my mum likes to listen. She's quite upset. But do you have kids?
I don't. No. Mm.
I realised that the very fact that you said, "Did she really?" Because if you did,
right,
and it was, yeah, you know, if somebody has a go, any one of my kids, you know, right, I'm absolutely kind of in their corner swinging. So it's just a natural reaction. Doesn't mean that she was right.
I am really sorry, Mrs. Brown. I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to offend your son. And I'll come around and clean your windows on Saturday morning or whatever I'm meant to do to kind of get in her good book.
I wasn't offended. It was Lucy was more offended.
Mm.
And so I think you should take this time now to apologise to her. And then you and I can have a virtual handshake through the magic of Skype and bid each other a good day. What do you reckon?
Lucy V. Freeman, I'm really, really sorry. Yes, I wouldn't offend you because secretly I'd like to take you out for dinner. And you haven't asked me, actually, you haven't asked me what Archer's listener I am. And that's another thing I can't stand. I don't get that. What is that? You know, are you a Rob Titchener or a Marjorie Antrobus or a, you know.
So why are you bothered that I haven't asked you then?
I don't know, because I was expecting, and you know, that's the full Dum-de-Dum experience, isn't it?
The listener vintage is important because you have people like Cosmo who have been listening since the 50s. And there are a lot of people who've been listening forever. I have to steel myself and think, well, wait on a minute, I've been listening since 1984. And I think it just helps to put people in context because gives you a sense of what type of perspective they have on things. So Jill Archer losing it this week with Pip is in part to do with Elizabeth, but is really to do with Phil's wife, Grace, isn't it? Yeah. But if you've only been listening to the thing for a couple of years, you'll have no perspective because you won't even know who Phil is. Because Phil's been dead for, what, 4 years? 5 years, whatever. So just that as an example, I think it gives you an insight into the person who's calling in. But then also, it is a deliberate ploy to create a sense and a feeling of community that you go, right, this is my pedigree. I can remember when this or that happens. And I would say, you know, the most successful podcasts, not all of them, but have inward jokes, self-referencing, where you, the longtime listener, you can keep up and you get it. It shouldn't be exclusive for new listeners.
The reason I get a bit irritated is when you've got people phoning in saying, oh, can someone do a bit of research? I'm trying to work out, isn't it? When you read my review, you weren't upset by it. I mean, you just thought...
The day when
I was just really surprised that you brought it into the show. I was like, "Wow, why did you do that?"
Well, because we can't ask for reviews and then also read a line or two, and then just say, "But actually, this doesn't exist." I'm much more thick-skinned. Lucy feels much more kind of protective, and I'm just like, "Well, it happened." And the thing is, you were so damning. It went from not being personal, to be honest with you. You were so damning. I thought, well, he's obviously just got out of bed the wrong side. The dog's just peed on his leg. His boss has just given him a notice, you know, 4 weeks' notice. Something's happened because it was just so damning and that I just couldn't take it personally.
I think there's an interesting point here because I think sometimes with the internet, and I really don't want to use the word troll because I don't see myself as a troll, and I was a little bit nervous because someone mentioned that on Twitter, and I actually you're striking me as less egotistical in this conversation than I thought you were, but I think I was unfair to say you were inarticulate. That clearly wasn't fair. Just, yeah, I must have had a bad day.
So I'm not a fan of the Archers then.
Well, that was do you know what? No, you know, you and Lucy were discussing plot lines. I think one of them was, I think, when you were talking about whether Ian, or what Ian knew about Adam's thing,
Pavel, you know, and Charlie
discussing it, and you were like, "Did Rob ever say anything?" Or, and you two couldn't seem to remember. Now, to me, that moment where he cornered Ian at his stag night and said, "Of course, you know about Adam's infidelities," I thought it was a key moment. And you two seem to be struggling to remember it. And I was like,
I think what we got mixed up with is obviously Rob had said, "Well, you know, you in effect, you dirty homosexuals." And we did kind of get confused about the fact that yes, Jenny had said to Rob about Adam's infidelity with Pavel, and we just got the two mixed up, but. I would defend that by saying that we don't want to come over as nerds. And that is really, really important. So when we are thinking out aloud, we are thinking out aloud so that we're kind of like your friends and you're just overhearing a conversation. Was that scripted? Absolutely not, right? Mm-hmm. But I'd forever leave that in. It makes you realise that the presenters are absolutely human. You're listening to two people have a conversation. And we're going to frequently get things wrong, get things slightly muddled. And that's the reason why it's a podcast, not a radio show. Right. You know, if it was a radio show, we'd probably have a couple of researchers running up and down. And then the producer would have whispered in our ear and said, no, actually, it was this and that was said and blah, blah. Oh, yeah, of course. But it would be a different show. It wouldn't be as intimate.
Going back just to the ego thing, but... can you see why people might think that in the sense that, you know, this Royfield brand production and, you know.
My initial reaction is to say no, right? But obviously, my middle name is try and view things from the other person's point of view. Remember, you know, the amount of time that I spend on this, I'm doing this so that I get work doing other stuff. Mm. And so I need to create a brand. So the other podcasts that I do all start off with the same little sting, but I'm a podcast producer. I'm not a presenter. Yes, I ask questions on Mid-Atlantic. That's where my argument slightly falls down. But all the other things I do, I'm nowhere near the microphone. And that is the vast majority of stuff, I'm nowhere near the microphone. It's like you writing an article and not putting your name at the end of it. That'd be stupid. You've got to.
Yeah, no, I get that. I don't think I'm a troll. I think I was in a bit of a bad mood that day, and I apologise. And it's a lesson to me to not shoot from the hip and not shoot my mouth off without thinking. Some of my friends jokingly still call me Mr. High Horse. You know,
saying that I'm somewhat dogmatic.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing was, I was a bit nervous about doing this because I thought if I go on, there's a certain amount of ego and going on and taking up airtime talking about your own review or your own thoughts on a program. There's some ego in that. But then I thought, if I don't face up and kind of, you know, if I don't front up when I'm asked to come on and kind of defend what I've written or explain it, then that actually is a bit gutless. And I thought, I can't not do it because that's not right, you know. So that's why I agreed to do it.
Maybe it's the Buddhist in me, but also it's the
you were Buddhist.
That would have really wound you up. I used to mention that all the time in the first 9 months.
Because I'm looking at studying Buddhism, so that's kind of really interesting. That's really, you know, it's something I want to do. So I might turn into Royfield.
Well, along with being a Buddhist, you got to become a Birmingham City fan to be me. So, but yeah, I tell you what, though, it's
too far.
And you're in Somerset, did you say?
I was. I'm in Bristol now.
All right. So there's going to be numerous Buddhist Nichiren temples. The network is great when you get into it. People are incredibly supportive. And I think it is important for us men, because I could tell within the first couple of minutes, start of this conversation, I knew that you didn't have kids. I don't know if you have a partner or not, but I know that as men, we can be islands and part of how we express ourselves. So you said that the way you express yourself in that review in hindsight was maybe a little bit too strong and whatever. And
yeah, blah, blah, blah. I agree.
Right. As men, we struggle to find connection with other people sometimes, or we overcompensate to not find connection. And the Buddhist thing is really good in just feeling that you're part of a wider community where people don't necessarily rely upon you, but actually have your back and yeah. are actually concerned about you. And also, all I've done is just ridiculously Buddhist. You've wrote this review, which was, you know, shitty and pointed at me. And I've just gone, well, let me try and talk to this person to see what I can learn. And this is for me personally as opposed to me professionally. And that's just classically Buddhist, you know, because right. even though in degree. Yeah.
No, I can see that. I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, it's a massive thing. If you've got children, it's a, you know, you have to get up every day. You have to bring in a crust, you know, whereas mm-hmm. with me, I just worry about myself, which is that makes you less ambitious. I mean, I do really busy at the moment, but I don't chase it like I used to.
Yeah, but you know what? But that's a good thing. And also maybe it's an age thing as well, because you're not, it's one thing to be 25 or 23 or, you know, in your early 30s and you're supposedly speaking, establishing yourself. But if you do have a decent life at 48, you shouldn't be chasing it.
Yeah, it's like that question when people turn around to you, and I don't know if anyone ever catches you on the hop and says, Royfield, are you happy? I don't know if you ever get asked that. And then you're caught unawares and you kind of go,
But somebody's more likely to ask that of you because you don't have the obvious trappings of happiness for somebody of your age.
Yeah, I guess not. Do you never get asked if you're happy?
No, because even if somebody wanted to ask me that question, before they ask me that, they're going to say, how are the kids? Blah, 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 right. blah, blah.
How would yours be?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Don't get me wrong. It's not that I'm not saying I couldn't be happier. I'm not saying that I couldn't be more content, maybe. I don't worry about it, though. Cool. There we go.
Oh, got hot ears under here.
Me arm's gone dead because I was lying on it on the bed.
Right. Do you think we can we claim workplace related injuries? You've got a dead arm and I've got hot ears.
Who are we claiming from? That's the question.
That's a very good question.
Mm. Right. Zoe Kunst.
Beg your pardon?
She sent us a message saying, where's Goddess Diva and Jan from Cannes? On the Twitters. Donald Trump was to speak in Ambridge on Monday. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Listen to the podcast on the train. Deb from Germany. Did the message get played or did I fall asleep? Good God, I miss loads. Anyway. Right. Okay, Lucy. Is there anything else we need to say to each other? Do you know Sarah Passingham? Is this a conversation we've had before, isn't it?
Passingham?
Yeah, Sarah Sarney.
No.
She kind of looks a little bit like Selena Scott in this picture.
Oh.
Mm. For some strange reason, whenever I see her, I always think of you like she's some pal of yours.
No?
Mm. Anyway.
I'm going to retweet that, though. That's quite funny.
Which one?
The cat lying on its back.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it's a dumpty mog, so that I always retweet. So are you retweeting it? Oh, you've already done it.
I just have.
Oh, well done. You're quick. Hmm. All right. Well, I'd best get off and do this after I've eaten some dinner with my mum and dad.
Go on then.
All right. What are you having for your dinner?
Pasta.
What are you having with your
very
pasta?
Very dull. I don't know yet. Probably just cheese. Oh, no, there's some chicken. I've just remembered. Yes.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right, cool.
Okay.
Toodaloo.
I'll do the Twitter thing now to tell people that it's who's on.
Smash in. All right, look.
Okay. See you
bye.
Bye.
Bye.